Now we are alone in this bedroom, my dear young lady. We shall see what we shall see. First I'll strip this off.
Oh!
Ah, there's something underneath, but I won't be thwarted. I strip that off too.
Oh!
And now I take a firm grip and strip this off.
Oh! Oh, what are you going to do now?
Oh, miss, I'll make good the plaster and give the entire wall a nice coat of mud.
Meanwhile, for those of a nervous disposition, here is Round the Horn.
Hello and welcome to the show. Now, first an appeal. Will the owner of the car number BZH97432168542873104 3D please remove it, as the number plate is blocking Lower Regent Street. Thank you very much indeed. Thank you. Now, last week we invited you to drop us a line and tell us about your hobbies. Well, perhaps the most popular hobby was do-it-yourself. But there were many others, some of which I can read to you, or one anyhow. A chap signing himself Green Fingers writes to say he's interested in roses, and during the warmer weather, rather partial to violets. And Mr. J.P. Goatwhistle enjoys philately, but I suppose none of us is immune to that. He says he has a sheet of Kaiser Wilhelm's with an unusual watermark on it. Thank you. Obviously, some of you have got a sheet of similar type. And he's got a blue triangular cape with a perforation down one side.
Nice.
And finally, a Mr. BK writes to tell me he's recently joined the Midwinter Nude Bathing Association. He says he was impressed by the turnout of members at the first meeting, but after the second icy dip, it got considerably smaller. Well, hard luck. Hard luck, Mr. BK. And now, the Round the Horn Forum of the Air, where people air their views and express their opinions on various aspects of the current scene. And here's the first caller now. Hello? Oh, hello, Mr. Gruntfuttock.
I am a writer, but I cannot get any of my plays broadcast. They spurned up their noses at my adaptation of Lady Chatterley's Lover.
Oh, what did they say was wrong with the script?
Oh, the script was all right, but they couldn't do the sound effects I requested. All I wanted was the moo of an outraged buffalo. You wouldn't have thought that was beyond them, would you?
No, I wouldn't. You know, a lot of writers start out writing for one person. Have you tried that?
Oh, yes. For years I've written for Jean Metcalf, but Cliff Mitchell Moore won't send her.
Well, better luck next time, Mr. Gruntfuttock. Goodbye. Hello, Horn here.
I'm an old admirer of yours.
Oh, how old?
23.
You're beginning to interest me.
Yeah, I've always wanted to meet you, Mr. Horn. Could I drop round for your autograph, possibly, any time?
Well, now, just as a formality, could you give me a personal description?
Oh, well, I have long red hair and blue eyes. 37, 23, 36. My friends say I'm very attractive.
Well, I don't usually do this, but if you'd like to pop round after six, I didn't catch your name.
Tuckforth. Flying Officer Reginald Tuckforth.
And now, on the radio link, an on-the-spot report from Gerald Monkshabit in Washington. I'm terribly sorry to say that, as usual, the line is rather poor again. Come in, Gerald Monkshabit.
Here in Washington, the election campaign is hotting up. According to political commentators, Republicans have huge... although they may not be as big as they were last year. The Democrats, on the other hand, have a growing... which appeals to the young voter. But, of course, their... are split, and it can swing either way.
Here, all the way from the outback of Earl's Court Road, complete with an ice-cold jumbuck, Miss Judy Coolibar.
Good on you, sport. I've notified the police where I am, so watch it.
Watch what? Oh, I'll rephrase that. All right. Now, what are you worried about?
Well, for all I know, that may be a two-way mirror with a hidden camera behind it, recording my every movement so you can gloat over them later.
I wouldn't dream of such a thing.
Oh, you some sort of Puritan, then?
Now, look, let's get on with it. I mean, let's continue the interview, that is. I understand you've left your last job.
Ha! Too right, Bluey. That office was full of obscene calendars with no pictures on them.
Pardon?
They're the worst kind, because you know what the pictures would be if they had any.
Yes, I hadn't thought of it that way.
After that, I went to work in the information desk. The very first morning, a man asks me if I can show him the way.
Well, sounds to me as if he's inculpable.
No, he's in Guy's Hospital, actually.
And thank you, Judy Coolibar. It's been a pleasure to have you, if you'll pardon the expression. And now, flying in the face of reason, Hugh Paddick will desecrate that grand old song, or should I say that hitherto grand old song, Poor Old Father. Ladies and gentlemen, Hugh Paddick.
I've worked hard all my life, I have, and that I don't regret. I'm worth £100 a week. But that's not what I get. My salary is £4.10, which may seem quite a lot, but it don't go far with all the big expenses I've got. Quite first of all, the missus always wants a bit, always wants a bit, and she takes a bit. The boy'll want a bit, the girl'll want a bit, and then the fella that calls from the insurance wants a bit. The landlord wants a bit, the milkman wants a bit, and the old bookmaker rather. I've all had a picking from me £4.10. There's ninepence left for poor old father. On Sundays for a treat sometimes, perhaps we have a fowl. And when the missus carves it well, it nearly makes me howl. If a fowl had two of everything, it wouldn't be so bad. So when we're having poultry, you can't wonder I feel sad. Cause first of all, the missus always wants a bit, always wants a bit, and she takes a bit. The boy'll want a bit, the girl'll want a bit, and then the fella that calls on the insurance wants a bit. The landlord wants a bit, the milkman wants a bit, and the old bookmaker brother. And when they've all had a pick, and you can guess what's left, it's the parson's nose for poor old father.
And now, looking £5 thinner in his Cyril Lord wig, it's Douglas Smith.
Ladies and gentlemen, how long is it since you were gripped in a cinema?
Well, it's some... Oh.
Well, we can guarantee that this week's film adaptation will bring you an emotional experience of unusual intensity. Suffocating boredom. Pornographic Productions present a stirring science fiction drama. Journey to Uranus.
The year is 2068. I'm Captain Morgan of the Space Corps. I still recall the day it all started. My crew and I were aboard the spaceship Venus. My word, you should have seen us. Yes. We'd had breakfast and we were almost ready for launch. It was a tense moment in the control cabin.
10, 9, 8, 7, 6.
Bingo!
Well done, miss. Boom, China City's yours. Now we can blast off.
Perched upon a pillar of fire, our mighty rocket gathered speed. The crashing acceleration built up. Eventually, we got to 3 G's.
G!
Across the cabin, I could see our biologist, the lovely Miss Nimble. She was strapped to her couch, helpless under the fierce pressure. That was when I blacked out. Well, that's my story, and I'm sticking to it. When I came round, we were floating in the silent vastness of space. I looked around at my crew.
I am Hugo Uplightly, the navigator. I plot our course by the stars. At the moment, Jupiter is in opposition to Mars. Saturn is niggled with Pluto. Donald Duck is mad at Goofy. Neptune is in transit. Mercury is in the thermometer. And your lucky colour is puce.
I am Ethelfrida Nimble, biologist. I have come on this expedition to study the strange and exotic flora.
I am the strange and exotic flora. No, it's just a nickname, of course. My real name is Poltroon Loosegannet. I have a mate certificate. I nicked it out of his pocket when he was in the simulator.
All right, crew, as you know, we're heading for the distant planet of Uranus. It's a 6 months' journey, and with 4 of us in a 3-foot cabin, it's not going to be much fun.
I don't know.
10 days out from Earth, we passed the orbit of Mars. Ahead lay a line of asterisks.
Don't you mean asteroids?
You haven't read the script. 21 days out.
Sir, the main engine has started smoking.
Well, you'll have to climb outside and repair it, Loosegannet.
Very well, I'll attach this line to my waist. But it won't be easy doing it in my spacesuit.
Are you sure that line is quite safe?
Well, if it isn't, that can cut it out of the recording. Here I go.
While Loosegannet worked on the engine, the rest of us waited inside the great spaceship.
At this point, I'd like to mention that I, Douglas Smith, play the spaceship. Seemingly motionless, I hang in the velvet black depths between the planets. My long, cigar-shaped body is an object of awe. My mighty nose glistens in the starlight.
Captain, I've found the trouble. A little hole, no bigger than a man's hand. The ship's been hit by a meteorite, or possibly a man's hand.
This was serious. We were losing air. And yeah. I, for one... and I, for one, had little enough to start with. I sent Uplightly and Loosegannet outside, and together they patched it up.
Little fingers.
All right, then, chum.
We sped on, passing Halley's Comet, which was dragging out a long, thin tail, rather as we are. And eventually we went into orbit around the planet Uranus.
Oh, look down there. Look down there.
Who wants to look down there?
Hardly worth the trouble.
I fired the retro rockets, put the main booster on short time, and we went into land.
Well, we're down, sir. Look through the porthole. Great steaming jungle.
The first time man has gazed upon it.
I'm opening the hatch. I'm going out into the undergrowth.
The first time man has set foot upon it.
I'm going with him.
Yes, well, I think that's quite enough first for one day. Now we must search to see if there's intelligent life on this planet. What does the sign say?
The Kenneth Williams Fan Club.
Well, we mustn't give up hope. We'll go on searching.
Seek.
Have you tested the air yet?
Yes, sir. It's one part oxygen, one part nitrogen, and 98 parts carbon dioxide. Exactly the same as London.
Lovely. Lovely. That means I can take off my spacesuit.
She did so, and then we saw them, two great grey creatures, coming towards us, waving. Coming towards us, waving. Half a dozen pseudopods and several real pods. They spoke.
Greetings. Greetings, strange bipeds. From the distant planet of Kilroy, it was here.
Pardon?
Well, that's what's written on the side of your rocket.
How is it you speak English?
We are great fans of your radio programs. We even name our children after them. I am Paul Temple, and this is my wife, 10 o'clock news.
Oh, well, you have different sexes on this planet.
Actually, we've got 15.
Really?
15 sexes?
It's not as good as it sounds. We have to get all 15 together to have a quorum.
And by the time we've had that, half of them have lost interest. We are a dying race.
I'm not surprised.
How do you manage on your planet?
Well, we... And then we... And after a while...
Really? That's how we make motor cars.
Any vacancies in the industry?
Ah, come, bipeds. We will take you to our city, set upon a lake of liquid gold, where broad boulevards and towering jade pinnacles offer a vista of paradise.
Sort of latter-day Ponder's End, really, yes.
Yeah.
Splendid. Now, Luce Kennett, up lightly. Stay here and guard the ship. Come, Miss Nimble. We go to meet the leader of the planet. Hail, O mighty ruler of Uranus. We of Earth salute you. We wait to hear your message to us.
You've got ever long wait. That's a parking beater.
Oh. Here comes our leader now.
Do not forget to undulate your pseudopods as a mark of respect.
Yes, I'll do my best. Hail! Hail, O mighty ruler.
Hello. You may kiss my mandible if you wish.
That's not the ruler of Uranus. That's Max Harris, a great banana-fingered buffoon. If he's the ruler, who's playing the piano?
I, Douglas Smith, play the piano.
He's up again, always pushing himself.
Thank you. In the interest of verisimilitude, I've painted my teeth black and white.
Oh, be quiet, sir.
It's a disgrace.
That's enough, that's enough, that's enough.
I'm fed up with it, always pushing himself.
All right, fine. We have come here to trade.
What?
We have come here to trade.
We wish to trade.
We wish to exchange tawdry plastic beads for precious metals and gems.
That sounds fair enough. How many tawdry plastic beads will you be wanting?
No, it's the other way around.
I said cocoa.
For hours we haggled and dickered, but finally they agreed to a trade with Earth.
Yeah, that's agreed. Then you give us diamonds and we will give you all the Earth you can carry.
Done. Oh, at least I think I have been.
Oh, Captain, I've been silent too long. A great deal too long, in my opinion. I don't trust these creatures. Great bug-eyed monsters.
Nonsense, Miss Nimble. Remember what I said to you in the spaceship?
I've never seen anything like them.
No, I mean after that. About friendship between the planets, mutual trust. Now, come, offer them your hand.
Oh, all right. There.
Thank you very much. Pass the mustard.
I could see it was time to act, so I took a quick drama course and spoke. One pseudopod, that woman. I drew my Mark II neutron disintegrator complete with real caps. Run for it, Miss Nimble. Back to the spaceship. 10 minutes later, we were pounding on the side of the great silver Douglas Smith.
Well, steady on, sir. You know how easily I bruise.
Bruce Gannett, up lightly. The Uranians are hostile. Take off at once.
Right.
Shouldn't we have got on board first?
Well, as it happens, we weren't marooned for very long. We received our checks from the BBC and they quickly brought us down to Earth. And now, ladies and gentlemen, rambling Sid Rumpo.
Thank you very much, my dear. Well, hello, me dearios. The song with which I'm going to tug at your artifacts this week is a tender story of true love and gentle passion with a soupçon of suggestion. It goes after this fashion, lightly but turgidly. In a dingy old bedsitter to the back of Dolly's Hill lived a grunger, Albert Munger, and his daughter, Spotty Lil. Oh, I loved her for her beauty with a passion so divine. Oft admired her through the keyhole, wished that one day she'd be mine. But she loved a used car salesman from the town of Hampton Wick. Spurned my glances, my advances, and it cut me to the quick. So I vowed to end my misery, jump into the foaming rill, rid myself of life's encumbrance, not to mention Spotty Lil. Round me neck I tied a millstone with which the miller's corn was ground. I was lucky, found the tide out, or I well might have been drowned. I no longer pine for lil boys, I have found another mate. All my miseries turn to joy, boys, since I married Spotty Kate. Spotty Kate.
Well, thank you, Rambling Sid. Well, I was going to Cornwall for a few days' rest, and I wanted to take some reading matter with me. You know, there's nothing worse than being in loo with nothing to read. So I popped into a bookshop in the King's Road. It was called Boner Books. Hello, anybody there?
Oh, hello, I'm Julian, and this is my friend Sam.
Oh, hello.
Thank you.
Oh, lovely to see you, Mr. Orne. Come in, troll round.
Are you looking for something between hard covers or something to slip in your pocket?
We have an enormous selection of livres de poches. That is your actual French for posh books. Livres de poches.
Poches, yeah. Mm, How about a nice classic? Mm. We stock every Omis edition.
Mm. Would you be interested in Spencer's Fairy Queen?
No, he's... he's not interested in mine.
Oh, there's your Wilkie Collins, Pallone in White.
Or how about a nice Moroccan-bound Poe?
That's nice. That is nice. That is nice.
Including such masterpieces of the macabre as the Telltale Heart Face, Fall of Usher's Letty, and his masterpiece...
Poe's Raven.
Is he? Never listen to gossip, Ducky.
We do all your poetry here. Longo Miss Hiawatha. Comes nice in your quarto, doesn't it?
Yeah. Look, I'm not too keen on poetry, except Shakespeare, of course.
Oh, wow. We do our own edition of Shakespeare, don't we? Yes. Mm. We've rewritten it ourselves in up-to-date Polari. Includes such things as Much Ado About Nanty, All's Boner That Ends Boner, Two Omies of Verona, and As They Like It.
Isn't that As You Like It?
Not really, but Live and Let Live, I say. But it has got some of the most beautiful language in your actual English tongue. Do that speech, Jewel. Jewel, that speech, you know the one, Seven Ages of Omi.
Oh.
Do it for him.
Oh, well, I don't remember it all, but I'll give you a paraphrase of it.
He'll give you a paraphrase, Miss Drawn. Yes. He'll give you a paraphrase as soon as look at you, he would.
I have to get in the mood.
Yes, he has to. He has to be in the mood before he can do it. He has to feel the muse, don't
feel,
you, Jewel?
Feel, yes. Mm, yes,
you're feeling it. Yes, he is. Look, Louise. Oh, he's feeling it. He's feeling the muse. Oh, look. Now it's dislighted on his shoulder.
Oh, I'm getting it. Yes. I'm getting it. It's upon me.
It's upon him, Mr. Orton.
What can I usefully add?
He has to get into the part, Mr. Orton. Like all the great actors, he has trouble getting into his part,
yeah,
don't
I do,
you, Jewel?
I do.
Oh,
yes.
It's true. All of them do. Even Sir John Gingold has that trouble. Are you ready now, Jewel?
Just ready.
He's ready. He's ready. The Seven Ages of Omi.
All the world's a stage, and all the Omis and Palones merely players. They have their exits and their entrances.
That's true, Miss Rawn. We all have our exits and our entrances. Every one of us. Yeah. Well, I know I do. Oh, yeah. Oh, carry on, Jewel. Nice.
Thank you.
Nice. Go on, love.
One Omi in his time plays many parts, his act being seven ages. At first, the infant, mewling and puking in the nurse's arms.
That's lovely. We all mule, Mr. Orton. I've mewled in my nurse's arms. I've mewled and on her lap, too. There's no stopping an infant, is there?
No.
No.
Well, my thoughts were turning more to puking.
Oh! It don't seem to be going down too well, Jewel.
No.
I'd cut to the soldier bit, though. You cut to the soldier.
All right, I'm being the soldier now.
He's being a soldier.
Then a soldier, all butch and full of strange panari.
Oh, he takes a good soldier. Oh, he does. It's his own military background.
Yes.
He was in soldiers in skirts, wasn't he? Lovely.
Then the justice.
That's something else he knows about. Look at him. No, he's aged. He's aged up for it. Look at it. You could swear he was 27.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Full of wise saws and moral instances. The sixth age shift.
He usually has trouble with that phrase.
Today was no exception.
No.
The sixth age shifts into the lean and slippered pantaloon.
Look, he's shifted into it. There he goes.
His youthful hose well saved. A world too wide for his shrunk lallies.
Ah. Look at that, Mr. Orton. His lallies seem to shrink before your very eyes, don't they? His lallies seem to shrink. Basically.
And his big, manly Obsons turns again to his childish treble.
Oh.
Last scene of all that ends this strange, eventful history. Is second childishness than mere oblivion.
Of course, they do wonders with tablets now. Now it's coming up to the big flash finish. Yes. Listen, listen, go on, Jewel. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Second childhood and mere oblivion. Nanty Ampsteads, Nanty Minces, Nanty Raya, Nanty everything.
A bravo, Jewel! Going, didn't
yes,
he?
It did.
I could see he got you going.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Beautiful.
Well, in the end, I bought their special edition of Shakespeare, and I must say I thoroughly enjoyed the Merry Palones of Windsor. And now I'm reading Hamlet, Queen of Denmark. I don't think Shakespeare will turn in his grave, though. Not if he's got any sense. Cheerio, see you next week.
That was Round the Horn, starring Kenneth Horne, with Kenneth Williams, Hugh Paddick, and Betty Marsden. Music by the Max Harris Group. The script was by Barry Took, Johnny Mortimer, and Brian Cook. And the programme was produced by John Simmons.